Blog Talk Radio.
I've been away too long.
Good afternoon, dear saints of God. Good afternoon and welcome to another weekly edition of the End Time News Report with our one and only Sister Marie. Well, she's already in studio and we are set to go. But before we bring her on, we just need to make a few announcements. First and foremost, if you are in need of prayer, send us your prayer request at powerofprayer2018@gmail.com. powerofprayer2018@gmail.com. Also, don't forget that Sister AJ will be in studio tomorrow at 2 p.m. to do her weekly show, which is called Is This the Church? And finally, if you're looking for a Bible Institute that will really help you serve your local church, serve the Lord Jesus there, and serve the local members there, we have a Bible Institute that is for you. It's called the International Institute of Biblical and Ministerial Studies. It is a free school of ministry, free school of training. There's no registration fee. There's no tuition fee. And there's no textbook fee because we don't have textbooks. You get a wonderful outline at the beginning of the class. The class, you meet once a week for 2 hours. 2 hours of theological training, 2 hours of biblical discussion. That's it. 2 hours per week, and you get an outstanding outline, a nice thick outline with much relevant information, and most of all, it comes straight out of the Bible. If you'd like to register, just email us at iibms@2020@gmail.com, iibms2020@gmail.com, and when you send us that email, you will be automatically registered. We are currently doing a series on vision. What is biblical vision and what is not biblical vision? And we are having a great time doing that study. So again, if you want to register for the classes, all you have to do is send us an email at iibms2020@gmail.com. Well, without any further ado, let me bring on my sister. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Bromo. How are you?
I'm doing good. And we got the announcements out of the way, and we're set to go here.
Okay.
Yep.
All righty.
Yep.
Do you want me to start off?
Well, if you have some introductory remarks, if you want to say anything about your crazy governor, if you want to talk about the weather, you know, I heard she was in trouble again. I heard because she's telling people over there in Michigan to put on their mask, and she was at a party with no mask.
Yeah, at a dinner party, shoved together.
Yeah.
With a bunch of people. Yeah.
Right.
Just
right.
Crammed
hanging
in together.
Out. Yeah, crammed
hanging
in together
out.
like sardines. No social
mm-hmm.
distancing. Meanwhile,
nope.
She's reading the riot act to everybody else, but they caught her on
mm-hmm.
camera like a big hypocrite that she is, not following her own rules.
That's right. Happens all the time.
Yep. Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Know, what can you say?
Sure.
And I think people are over her. They're over
oh,
her.
Please. I wouldn't be surprised if her husband is over her. I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, I walked into Walmart yesterday without a mask.
Right.
And there were a lot of people in there with nothing on their face.
Wow.
They're done.
Sure.
They're done.
Sure.
So, you know.
Yeah.
She can't live up to what she orders other people to do. You know, what can you say?
Absolutely.
But, yeah.
I mean, look, it's like a parent, right? If you tell a child, as a parent, if you tell a child, don't do this, this is no good for you, and then they catch you doing it, what moral
mm-hmm.
authority do you have? The next time you tell them don't do it, it's going to go in one ear out the other.
That's right.
Right?
Yep.
So
and, you
my
know,
governor...
She went to Florida. She
right.
went to Florida on some money. They're trying to figure out who paid for this trip to visit
sure.
her sick dad while telling people
mm-hmm.
not to go to Florida.
Right.
So,
right.
They caught her.
Sure, sure. And and of course, her excuse was, well, I was in a private, jet. I was in, you know,
yeah.
There wasn't a, but that's not, that's not what you're telling people. You're telling them not
yeah.
to go to Florida. That's it. Again,
yeah.
like my governor, like Governor Newsom over there in California, they're just hypocrites. Hypocrites.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's right. That's
yeah.
right. That's what they're turning out to be. I guess the big debate now is, the big argument, is they want to know who paid for that jet. Someone said it's like, you know, that trip would have been at least, in a private jet, $30,000.
Sure.
So
the fuel,
they're
the
trying
gas.
To make her...
The plane fuel, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
yeah. So she's
and
not giving some, that up easy.
Yeah, and if somebody, listen, if somebody donated the trip to her, is she going to file it in her campaign report? Because you're not supposed to take gifts
right.
from people.
That's
you're
right.
You're not supposed to take gifts.
Well, what I heard was that it's also the company that owns the jet is, owned by Republicans. She's a Democrat.
Right.
So... they won't, you know, it's all about, okay, now I did this for you, you can do this for me. It's about,
correct.
You know, you owe me one. So that's,
right.
that's where, you know, so it's crazy. It's crazy.
Absolutely.
You know, it's hard to take these people seriously about anything anymore. So
no, you can't.
I'm done.
Them.
I'm over.
You, that's it. That's it. When they tell you to do something, just ignore them. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
That's
exactly.
It.
So today we're going to listen to Manning Johnson. Okay, if you're not familiar with Mr. Johnson, he was a member of the U.S. Communist Party and authored a book that was called Color, Communism, and Common Sense. That was in 1958. So the audio we're going to listen to is called Manning Johnson's Farewell Address. This was recorded in a church, and the church's name was Broadway Tabernacle Church in Seattle, Washington.
Hmm.
There's no exact date on the audio. So in this, Mr. Manning reveals the truth about communism in his time.
Right.
And it's extremely prophetic for our time. We're seeing today what he tried to expose back then. It's amazing. He's
mm-hmm.
an amazing man. So he went from being a communist of stature to an American patriot after he realized he was being used by activists in a plot to destroy the United States, this country.
Wow.
He's extremely brave, and he took a stand against communism. Once he realized what they were doing, he took a stand against it. He also exposes many organizations that are still in operation today. And what captivated me about Mr. Manning Johnson is
mm-hmm.
his sheer honesty. You know, he knows the
right.
truth about communism. And he's willing to expose it. This man had no fear, you know,
mm.
of stepping out and speaking against things. And it's amazing
right.
he picked a church, you know, in this broadcast to do that. So do you have anything to say before I continue with the intro?
Well, it sounds very interesting, you know, this whole new theme that you're introducing.
Mm-hmm.
And you've already heard the audio, so if you say the guy's smart as a whip, I'll take your word for it, and I just can't wait to hear
yeah.
What he's got to say.
He's a real logical person. He thinks, you know, logically about everything. You know, I really enjoyed it. I listened to it twice, going on three times, you know. And at this point, when I, you know, I'm beyond – confirmation bias, you know. When I look at
mm-hmm.
things now, I investigate everything that I was told in the past. When you grew up, you know, your parents told you different things because they're telling you what they knew. And now I investigate everything. You know, it's like I'm finding out a lot of our history has been twisted. So in this audio, Mr. Manning will expose who really started segregation in the South, what the U.S. Supreme Court did to the lives of more than 130,000 qualified black teachers in the South, what communism did in 1928 to ensure a civil rights insurrection today, and finally, whose assignment is it to downgrade a black community into a ghetto and to see that it remains a ghetto? That fascinated me. I mean, it's amazing what he reveals in this. This is called Manning Johnson's farewell address because Mr. Johnson didn't know this would be his final speech. He died after the speech was delivered. Now, some think his death was due to enemy conspiracy, but there's no research to back this up or to confirm this or deny it, you know. So he was, how he died, he was with friends driving in Lake Arrowhead, California, when he was involved in a car accident. The car went off the road, out of control, and went into a ravine. He did not die in the accident. He got up, walked away. He thanked God, you know, for surviving. But several days later, he died of a coronary condition that he had for several years. Now, I don't know if he knew about it, that condition. You know, who knew about that? No one knows. But that's according to the coroner's report. So if Mr. Manning's warning wisdom and logic would have been heeded during that time, the communists would not have succeeded in provoking violence and insurrection that we witness today. If people would have listened to him back then, you know, they'd have had a heads up because, I mean, come on, he was a communist, a member of the Communist Party in the United States.
Right.
So when he comes out and speaks against it, I mean, I would have been all ears. What do you have to say? So we do know this final speech was done in a church, and he was speaking about the NAACP. When the recording started, someone realized that this is a really important message and they needed to record it. So there's a lot of, you have to forgive, there's a lot of older slang terms used in here in the audio, but that was by Mr. Manning himself. And I want to add that the royalties to this album or recording, because this is on an album, are paid semi-annually to the Manning Johnson Scholarship Fund. And that provides higher education opportunities to deserving young black men and women. And it could be a resource for today for anyone who wants to go into higher learning, you know, wants to do that. You know, nowadays you can't trust these colleges, but there's a resource available for that through this organization. So, you know, it's going to a good cause. So I understand Marxism, I understand communism, and I understand the tactics, but there's some valuable information about organizations in here that I'm not familiar with, but you might be. It's going to be a great help on this role. So we're going to start this at 3:18, and you can stop this anytime you'd like to comment. There's no, you know, we're going from here to there, whatever.
Right.
If you want to say something, stop it. Or if you want to correct him or, you know, add some info, you know, give your own opinion, that's fine.
Whatever
you think. Or if you see things differently than he did,
feel free
to say it because, you know.
Mr. Manning is what we call African-American.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right, here we go. Manning Johnson. Okay, his last name is Johnson.
Yeah, that's 318. We're starting at 318.
Right.
We're skipping the first intro of this guy.
Okay.
Because we just went through all that.
Right. We're doing an audio volume test, so hold on.
The NAACP collects millions of dollars to racial incitement.
Does that sound good?
Perfect.
Okay.
Yep.
Advancement of colored people.
The NAACP collects millions of dollars to racial incitement. They go out of their way to create race issues. Because the more race issues they create, the more they've got an appeal for begging for funds. But what do they do with that money? What do they do with it?
Listen, I like the guy already.
I want to know what they do with it, too. I mean, that was one of my questions. What do, what benefits do the people get from it? You know, that was my first question, too. So I'm glad you stopped there.
Right, right. And the point that I see, which is critical, right, is that a lot of these organizations, for example, take Samaritan's Purse. Take Billy Graham's organization. Okay?
Right.
You know, okay, Samaritan's Purse. Okay. These people thrive on hurricanes and floods. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because when there is a flood or a hurricane, what do you see the president of the Samaritan's Purse doing on TV? He's asking you for money.
Correct.
Right? So I'm not saying they don't do some good work. I'm not saying that. But a lot of these organizations wait for a tragedy to happen. Hurricanes are big money makers for these organizations because then, you know, it's a golden opportunity to come on and say, will you help us? Help these people. Now, when you look at the salaries that the people on top get, you say, but wait a minute. What if my let's say if I'm only able to give $20, how do I know if my $20 are going to help people in Louisiana or are they going to pay for Franklin Graham's $1 million salary or half a million, $1 million, whatever? How do I know if my $20 are going to help them or if it's going to help him?
Right.
Right?
Right.
So, again, a lot of these organizations like, Reverend Al Sharpton's Rainbow Coalition or Reverend Jesse Jackson, whatever, all of these groups, man, they just loved, you know, if somebody gets shot, let's start raising money so we can, you know, fight the cause.
Right.
And, you know.
But you know, I thought about that too, and I once read the fine print with a ministry, and it says that they designate the amount that goes, like if you give to the charity, they designate where they give it and the amount totally, they could do anything with it. They could say, okay, we'll give a dollar to something totally different to the, you know, maybe the LGBT community, you know, or, you know, they could do anything they want with that money if you read the fine print, and that's in ministry. So imagine a secular organization, what they can
like
do.
When you look at the Rod Parsley broadcast, I don't know if he's still on the air, but Rod Parsley, there used to be a disclaimer that when you give to that ministry, to Bridge of Hope, his ministry is called Bridge of Hope. When you give to Bridge of Hope, It's at their discretion what they do with the money.
Yes, exactly.
So you don't know what you don't know what Rob Parsley's doing with that money. You don't know.
Right.
But they're begging because there's a famine in Ethiopia and they want you to support it. Mm-hmm. But then the disclaimer says they can use the money wherever they want to.
Yes. Exactly.
See?
And how much?
So,
yeah.
Right.
If they bring in $1 million, they could give $1 to an organization and legitimately say that they gave to an organization, you know, to help some organization or, you know, some cause. They could do that under that, you know, disclaimer. So, you know, it's crazy. But, yeah, where is it going?
Nobody knows.
Nobody
knows except the power, the people that are in power. They get to determine.
Mm-hmm.
And you think you were helping out with this cause, and you don't know if the president of the organization is taking out his entire family and friends to a steak dinner on your back. You don't know.
Yes. You don't know. And it's going to be funny because he's going to tell you a little bit about that, what you just said.
Right.
You're amazing. Oh, you nailed it.
That's kind of what he says. And you know what?
Go ahead. And
listening to this guy who said this in 1958, it seems to me like the church learned how to do this from these worldly organizations.
Exactly.
Because back in the 1950s, you know, the church was really the church. But it seems like as they snuggled up to these organizations, these political monsters, They learned, oh, we can do this too. We can just call it XYZ, and we can do what they're doing.
Maybe
right? That's
why he went to the church first. I just thought of that when you said that. You know,
one
of the places he went was to warn the church, the black church, what was happening.
Right.
That was one of his first stops with us, you know. Let's go right to the church, because the church back then, like you said, it was in decent shape, you know.
It was in decent shape.
Yeah.
But now I'm listening to him and I'm saying, wow, he's speaking to this generation.
Yes.
Right?
Very prophetic for today.
Yeah, it's like when you watch Fox News and that organization for the organization of Christians and Jews, and then they start talking about, can you please help these Holocaust victims? Well, let me tell you something. These Holocaust victims that they're talking about must be, you know, they must come from the planet Krypton because they're still alive. They must be as strong as Superman, because all the people that I know from World War II, they're gone. My father-in-law served in World War II. He's gone. My mother-in-law served in World War II. And listen, the people that I'm talking about, my family members and other World War II vets that I know about, they were not in concentration camps.
That's right.
So these people that were supposedly in concentration camps, they're still alive today after all that ill treatment. Something smells funny to me. That you can't find a World War II vet today, but yet these Holocaust victims are still alive. Explain that one to me.
And Germany, I think it's Germany and Poland, I'm not sure what country, still give reparations to the victims or the descendants of the victims in Israel if you can prove that you're a descendant, supposedly prove. Well, we know that people have gotten around that, you know, by coming up with paperwork. We've seen a documentary on that, little audio clip. But they get, like, I don't know, it's like, you know, over $1,000 a month in Israel.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know.
Just follow the money.
Always follow
the money. That's it. Follow the money.
Yeah.
Okay, here's more from Mr. Johnson. I like him already.
They do not spend one single cent to build any factories or shops to create jobs or to contribute to the development of free enterprise in our country. They're not interested in that. In fact, when they hold a convention, they don't even go near the Negro neighborhood when they're spending their money. In Cleveland recently, when they held their convention, they collected money from the business people in Cleveland, the colored business people. They went to a white hotel and they ate in white restaurants.
I like them even more.
He just made your case. What is that?
You see,
oh, that's
listen
so
to me.
Funny.
Listen
yeah,
to me.
That's right.
These black bishops collect
mm-hmm.
money from black people, and then they go to Vegas, they go to Rodeo Drive, right? They go shopping,
yep.
They live in gated communities, right? They,
mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it. Same thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Same
think about
thing.
It. They collect all this money from the African-American community, and then they go into the white restaurants and spend it all, you know, and white businesses
right.
and things like that.
Right.
So
right.
what do, you know, and they're collecting the money to help their community, you know,
yes.
to help establish, you know, in the black
that's
community,
the lie.
They're helping.
That's
that is
the lie.
The lie.
We're going to help
yep.
you, and then they take that money and they live large, you know,
mm-hmm.
somewhere else.
That's right. It's amazing.
See,
this is an insider. He knows all this.
Right. Right. And they don't create a job in their own neighborhood. They don't get they don't give people jobs. They don't create jobs. They're
nope.
parasites. They're blood-sucking parasites.
That's
they're
right.
leeches.
Yep.
Sucking the money out of the community, taking the money out of the community, and then going to the same the same people that they attack in their speeches. Oh, the man, he's got you down. The man's got his foot on your neck. The man this, the man that. Then they go take that money and they go spend it on the man.
Yes, exactly. Doesn't make sense, does it?
Doesn't make sense. You see,
no.
And that's the insanity.
Yep.
I mean, this is the craziness.
Yep.
And we see this every day. Every day.
We certainly do.
All right. The title of this audio is Color, Communism, and Common Sense. Oh, if we only had some common sense.
Yeah, he wrote that book. This one's his farewell address, but he actually wrote a book, and I would like to get that book. There's a lot of info in
mm-hmm.
that book. I'll bet a lot of things
sure.
we won't hear that he knows. So this is fantastic, yeah.
Right. Okay.
They didn't spend any money in the Negro business places. Yet they say that they're for the race. It's unfortunate that when they were in Washington at this so-called summit conference, they went to the Raleigh Hotel, the White Hotel on Pennsylvania. They ate in the restaurants there. They didn't even go near the colored community. They're supposed to represent the colored people. They do not want to spend one single penny of the money that they collect for the purchase of land and home construction. They're not interested in that because they consider the purchase of land and development of a Negro community as segregating yourself. They'd rather see the Negro with nothing than to have that kind of thing developed. They're only interested in one thing, to get into every neighborhood, but build nothing yourself. They spend nothing for specialized training for talented youth. If it wasn't for white philanthropists establishing foundations and contributing money for these purposes, there would be no means of talented young men getting financial aid in order to educate themselves. and they'll tell you about inequality of education. The communists have planted the idea, don't do anything for yourself, just get out there and fight and yell and scream and demand everything. They don't spend a single penny for building hospitals. I remember back in the 30s, there was a campaign to build a big colored hospital in Harlem. And there was an obstreperous group of white liberals and Negroes who were against it. Now, here was an opportunity for them to build this hospital that was bound to the credit of the Negro. But this small group vetoed it. Said, this is segregating yourself. The Jews and everybody else build hospitals. The Negro won't build any. And he stands off and says, you're segregating yourself when you build it. I don't know by what logic these people come by that. That's a good excuse for doing nothing.
Boy, you can put this guy in a church pulpit and just tell him go. Just have fun. Just do what you do. Just keep talking.
Oh. You know, you got to remember. You know, he's talking about an organization, but he's actually talking about communism. So
right.
We have to presume that a lot of these organizations that he's exposing are communist organizations intended to take down the country. This man served his country, you know?
Look,
he served his country, and how he ended up in this, I don't know, but he certainly, when he got out, he exposed it. Go ahead.
Look, if you solve a problem, right, listen, you ask for money to solve a problem. So The money keeps rolling in as long as the problem exists. If you solve the problem, if you create jobs, if you educate people, if you put people back on their feet, if you teach a man how to fish, listen, if you solve an economic problem, an educational problem, then there's no longer a need to ask for money. So this is why they're always asking for money. They never solve anything, because if they solve it, then the demand for money has to end. That's it.
Yeah, they're unemployed.
So this is why they never solve anything.
That's right.
On
good
purpose.
Point.
On purpose.
Yes. Yep. So what these organizations do, that's their job, basically, and they keep that job by keeping people suppressed in every area. Because if they don't, then they're out of work. They're unemployed. You see?
Yep.
Oh, it's terrible.
Sure.
That's a good point.
Now, listen, doctors are always going to be – doctors and nurses, you're always going to need them, because sickness is always going to be with us. That is not a problem you're going to solve. Sickness is not a problem. Sickness and disease and death is not solvable, because the wages of sin is death. Preaching will never end, because there's no shortage of sinners. There's sinners everywhere. But there's some things that you can solve. There's some things that you can put an end to. But these people won't do it. Why? Because then it kills their money-making machine.
Right.
And they don't want to stop that. Listen, they get to fly. Think about it. Here you are. You're Reverend Sharpton. You're in New York. The cops are after us. Then you get to fly to Minneapolis. Well, who's paying for that?
Exactly.
Who's paying for your first class ticket and your steak? Who's paying for that? You see? Listen, these guys, they're living large. Large.
Yes.
Large.
Yes.
Right?
And, you know, I thought about this because – and you remember we talked about this when they were going to, I think it was, BLM was going to march in our area, and it was actually the African-American people, or, you know, that spoke up and said, no, don't listen to these people. They're not from here. They have no idea what this community's like, nor are they interested or invested in this community. You know?
Right. Sure.
Told them go away. No, you know, and it was actually because in the community that we're in, I mean, we're all, there are business owners, mixed
right.
business owners everywhere. And, you know, we patronize one another. And that community is set up, and I'm not saying it's perfect, but it is set up where we all live together. And there's just not this, you know, constant beat like you would hear down in maybe Detroit, you know, this constant
mm-hmm.
Turmoil and stuff. And it's because,
right.
you know, there's they don't want to, nobody wants to lose their business. Nobody wants their business shut down. Nobody wants their patrons to leave over an organization. You know, they don't want to lose their customers because
right.
an organization from out of town comes in and trying to start, you know, chaos. No, it doesn't, you know. So this idea is foreign to me being, you know, in this area.
Right, right, right.
So, you know, they haven't let this infiltrate our area. You know.
Right.
And it works out well for everybody. It works out. I mean, you know, our doctors, our lawyers are black here. You know, we have the best
mm-hmm.
lawyer, I think, in the state is here, who is a, she's black. We have lawyers. We have councilmen. We have, you know, so it's a community that doesn't
right.
have these tensions. So that's why I'm saying when you have an organ, that's why I think, you know, the people stood up and said, no, not in this community. We don't want these tensions because
right.
things, it's different here. It's different here for us.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
and they stood up. They stood up, not anyone else. They stood up and said, no, don't listen to this. They don't live here.
Right.
They don't eat here.
Right.
You know, they don't pay taxes here.
Right.
They have nothing to do with this community. They need to get out and mind their own business. Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So, but it took someone standing up to do that. You know, it took a,
sure.
a group of people to stand up and say that. And that was within the black community. They
right.
said, no, we're not tolerating this, you know,
yeah.
because
yeah.
they must know what was coming down, what he's talking about. They must understand some of that somewhere, you
mm-hmm.
know,
sure.
what these organizations do. I don't know. But
yeah,
I thought
they,
it was great
were...
because, go ahead.
No, like you were saying, take a guy like T.D. Jakes. You think a guy like T.D. Jakes who is an entrepreneur, right? Now, I'm not
mm-hmm.
validating T.D. Jakes. I'm not saying
right.
He's, you know, I give him the thumbs up. No, I don't give him the thumbs up. But you think T.D. Jakes, who is a man who builds, is going to allow blacks who tear down and destroy into his neighborhood?
No.
No. Why? Because T.D. Jakes
no.
is a builder.
Yes.
Right? He builds. T.D. Jakes, the bottom line for T.D. Jakes is, are we making money? Not are we, you know, tearing. We're not tearing down any pharmacies. We're not burning any
mm-hmm.
stores. We're not doing any of that because I live in this neighborhood.
Yes.
So
mm-hmm.
there are some who just, you know, are like fuel to the fire. They show up, the man is keeping us down, and that's how they rouse up the crowd and you know, listen,
mm-hmm.
George Floyd, it's a very sad case what happened to George Floyd. It should have never happened.
Absolutely.
That police officer should
have
never murdered him. Should have never murdered him. But having said that.
That's right.
The police officer's in jail. He's been found what? Guilty, right?
Mm-hmm.
And George Floyd's family got $27 million.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that $27 million equals a life. It doesn't. But listen.
Absolutely.
If George was alive today, he'd probably be asking his brothers for money.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have $27 million.
That's right.
So, again, I wouldn't want my child to have a police officer put a foot on his neck or her neck. I don't want $27 million off the death of my child.
Right.
But at least, listen, in today's climate, we're not talking about 1950s, the police officer would have not went to jail, and in the 1950s, you wouldn't have gotten a red cent. But
yes.
Today, that police officer went to jail. Other police officers are going on trial now because they were accomplices, and the family
mm-hmm.
got $27 million. And by the way,
right.
you know Reverend Al Sharpton got his tithe from that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yep.
You see? And what is Reverend Sharpton
yep.
waiting for? He's waiting for the next one to get killed so he can run over there and use that
That's
as
right.
a cause to raise money. It's
well,
just
I was
the way
looking
it is.
At an article that made sense because I was reading an article where that one girl was killed and the mother said, what has, you know, all this outrage with BLM and I haven't seen a red cent. She rebuked them and denounced them. She said they just collected money off my child's death.
There you go.
And that's exactly what they did. She was
sure.
exactly right.
Sure.
They
Absolutely.
Haven't helped her one bit.
No. They
collected all that money
her.
Off, yeah, off
who's
her death,
next,
her child's
who's
death.
Who's the next sacrificial lamb that can go down so we can have a cause to raise money? Who's the next
right.
one?
That's right.
It. All right. Here's Mr. Johnson.
That's sad.
And you merit nothing but contempt because when you don't do anything, people don't have anything but contempt for you. But when they can point to something that you do constructively, they can say with pride, what a fine community of people we have and how industrious and progressive they are. That goes far in the direction of breaking down any prejudice than anything else could do. Not a cent do they spend for convalescent homes and homes for the aged. I know one preacher collected money from his congregation and built a home for the aged, then he kicked them out and moved in himself. They don't spend a cent on classes and personal hygiene and sanitation. Care and upkeep of property, combating crime and juvenile delinquency. They'll point to juvenile delinquency and crime among the white groups and say, well, there's crime over there, so we've got it among ourselves, as if the existence of crime among other racial groups justifies crime among Negroes. And if other groups don't do anything, then they are justified in not doing it. They don't spend a single penny to aid the Negro youth in preparing for stiff job competition. There are many other things that I could talk about that they don't even consider doing. They'll tell you that's not within our field. You know why that's not within their field? It's because to do those things would eliminate all of this racial friction and unrest because they would be so busy doing things constructive that will let the Negro lift himself up by his bootstraps that he wouldn't have time to go around and create friction.
There you go. There you go.
He just confirmed what you said.
Yeah. They don't listen.
Yeah.
They don't want to end it. It's a cash cow.
Yep.
It's a cash cow. It's what it is. I mean,
yeah.
the money's rolling in. Don't fix the problem. Just keep blaming somebody else. The man has got you down. No. The man doesn't. Look, it's like, I hate to harp on this, but it's like these bishops who are always telling the people, you go to the banks and they don't give the Negroes a loan. Well, for a house. They won't give you a mortgage. Well, that's because the Negro doesn't have the down payment. If you have a savings account in the bank and you save for the down payment and you have a track record of saving and you have a track record of employment, the banks will loan you to give you the mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why the Negro doesn't have the money is because you collect 5 offerings in 1 service.
That's right.
And you keep telling that
You're
person that God's going to open up the windows of heaven and pour him out a blessing that he won't be able to contain.
Right.
Right? So you're fleecing them 5 times in 1 service.
Right.
And then you say, the man is out to get you. No, the man's already got you, and he's behind the pulpit.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's what he said. Would they buy? He just said a pastor in there bought a senior living home
raise money. Raise money for a nursing home, and kick the people out, and he moved in.
Yes, unbelievable.
That's what they do.
They're still doing it today.
Right.
They're
that's
still
it.
And you know, I have to go back and focus. This is the. These groups are involved in communism. This is about communism.
Well, of course it's communism.
So you have to say the money's behind communism. There's a lot of money.
Well, it's like in Russia. Who lived rich in Russia where the people were starving? Well, the communist leaders. You think President Xi of China – who they made president for life. You think he's eating grass like the rest of the people in China? You think he's
eating
grass? Not by
the looks of them.
No. No, he's living large.
Exactly.
All of these people on top of the pyramid are living large.
Yep. That's right.
It is what it is.
Yep.
It is what it is. So,
okay.
The communists sold them the idea that a Negro community is a ghetto. That isn't so. Every race and nationality has a community. It's natural for people of the same race and nationality to move in an area and the others come in, and before you know it, you have a community. You go one end of this country to the other. You'll find a German community, you'll find a Polish community, you'll find a Jewish community, you'll find a French community. As many nationalities as you have, you'll find communities across the width and breadth of this nation. Yet when a Negro has a community, they say that's a ghetto. And when they label it a ghetto, then you don't have to take care of it, you don't have to do anything about it. Let it go to seed, go to pot. Well, when you haven't learned to keep your own community, how can you expect to keep anybody else's community if you moved in there? And that's the friction. Just like charity begins at home and spreads abroad. You know what the trouble with the NAACP is? Not only the radical element that we find operating, but you see is that the NAACP always harps on Negro rights, but it never says anything about Negro responsibility. Because there cannot be equal rights without equal responsibility. Take, for example, a simple thing like community development. If the Negro develops a community, make it a model community. And I saw one in Louisville, Kentucky when I was there. God bless that Negro contractor, wherever he is. He built up this community, one of the finest I have seen in the country. And one of the first things that the Commonwealth Attorney said to me when I came to Louisville was, I want you to see this colored community. He says, we're proud of our colored citizens here. He said, they have one of the finest kept communities in our city. That made me very proud because he said, whenever strangers come in, we advise them to go over and see this community and see the model home that this Negro contractor has built.
You see, and that proves that it is possible to have nice things and live well if you put your mind to it.
Correct.
Right? It proves that in America, if you apply yourself, you can live the American dream.
Yes.
Right now,
unlike
America,
other countries, there are some countries you can't.
Right.
But go ahead.
Listen, America's not perfect. I know America's not, but I've been other places. I've been to other countries. And let me tell you, when I was over there, I couldn't wait to get back to America.
Right.
You see? So again, yet with all of its warts, with all of its scars, with all of its, you know, because it's not perfect. America's not perfect. But compared to all the other countries on the face of the earth, no one comes close.
That's right. And
so,
even going, if you go to Mexico, I felt sorry because they were making, I talked to one of the workers at a hotel we were staying at. And he was saying that they only make like $20 a month, and they live outside of these luxurious, you know, hotels and stuff that they have there. They live in little shacks, and they're just, you know, I felt so bad because he was telling me what it's really like, you know. They make nothing.
Sure.
Absolutely. And those communities, I'm going to tell you, you have to go through some of the communities to get to the hotel.
The hotel.
And they were horrible. They were
sad.
Horrible.
It's sad.
And another, yes, it is. And another place was also in the on the reservation. The last time we went on vacation, we actually went to a reservation. And I couldn't believe how the people lived, you know, actually on the reservation. There, you know, you had mobile homes that were falling apart everywhere. People were living in. They were poor.
Right.
So,
but again,
you know,
that's because they choose not to do what? To apply themselves.
Correct.
Look,
correct.
Where I live at, there's nice homes. And then there's homes that are just falling apart. I see the ones that are nice. I see the owners outside painting, sprucing up the place with plants and everything else. And I see and the other houses that are falling apart, you go by and the owner just has more junk on the porch. It's how people choose to live.
That's true.
You know,
that's
some
true.
Some people want to drink and smoke and hang out, and other people choose to go to work and make a living and push their kids through private school or, you know, whatever and just to better, you know, you tell the next generation you have to be better off than what you and what I and your mother were.
Right.
We preach that. We preach that to our kids. You got to go further than me and mom because our parents told us that we had to go further than them. And that's what you preach.
And
so
exactly.
You can do it. He just said it. You go to Kentucky, and Kentucky's racist. No, in 1958, this guy's talking about a model community.
Yes.
It can be done.
Well, our community can prove that. You know, I could take you to what they have labeled and why. I see why they label it a hood, and it is funny. Something he said really made sense to me. You have Jewish communities, you have Asian communities, you have German communities, whatever. But when you have the black community, they call it the hood. You know, why? Because they want to keep people in that community feeling it's a hood, and they never have to go in and change anything. And then these leaders get rich, like Sharpton and all that, because they're constantly, you know, keeping the people down. But in our community, I can show you what, you know, even low-income housing is nice housing. You know, it's
keeping,
you know, well manicured. The people take care of it. You know, everybody takes care of, you know, sure you have some houses. Actually, the ones that are falling apart in the community normally are owned by the white people, you know.
Right.
That are, you know, partiers or whatever. That's what I could say in this community. You know, it's different. It's different here.
I think years ago
it might have been different, but I don't know.
If you, listen, at one time, yes. At one time, they forced you to live in certain neighborhoods. At one time, they forced you to take certain jobs. They forced you to eat in certain restaurants. We don't live in those times anymore. Yes, that once was a reality. We're not denying that was not a reality. It was a reality at one time, not today.
That's right.
And you know what? Listen. When I go to places and I know that I'm not wanted, you know what I do? I don't force myself there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, if I know that my kind is not wanted, I don't push the issue. It's not worth pushing the issue.
Right.
I'm going to be a lot happier going where I am accepted.
That's right.
Right?
And
I mean, as a Christian,
you're going to expect that. You need to expect that being a Christian, that, and it will get worse. Being a Christian, you're going to not be accepted and wanted in certain places, you know? So, you know.
Yeah.
Just to let you know ahead of time.
Sure. Absolutely.
They don't want to see you because you make them feel uncomfortable, you know? So you're not wanted in some places, Christians, especially
right.
in the church. Excuse me, in the churches. There's a lot of churches that don't want you if you stick with the Bible right now. You're not wanted, and you know that. You know that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
So it applies. It will apply to all of us eventually.
It applies. Yeah, sure. Sure.
Now that example goes a long way in creating a good understanding and appreciation of the Negro's ability. But a small group or minority of Negro intellectuals are vetoing that certain thing. Now every race and nationality recognizes differences amongst people. These differences, every race and nationality recognizes the fact that there are differences based upon cultural, economic, and social standing. Whether you are German or Greek or Polish or any other nationality, they recognize it because some people are more studious than others. They study more and they acquire knowledge. People are more industrious than others and they acquire wealth and position. Then there are people who have traditions and background of culture. So they're just taken for granted. They have their, naturally, people gravitate according to their level in society. It's a natural thing. But certain intellectuals, they are telling the Negro that we're going to crash everything. We're not going to recognize this as far as the other groups are concerned. If they don't let us in, we're going to call them discriminators. Don't let us in, we're going to call them discriminators. And when they do that, they cause a lot of friction and bitterness. And people who had no prejudice against them automatically become prejudiced. Because they know that the very persons that you're trying to bring in do not, on the basis of their cultural, financial, or any other standing, belong there. Even the Negroes themselves have a caste system. There are certain Negroes that don't associate with other Negroes and don't want them around. They have their dances and their parties and their affairs. And other Negroes, except they get an invitation, can't come in. Take the Caribbean, for example. They've caste systems all through there. In Haiti, Jamaica, and everywhere else. This isn't accidental. This exists all over the world. Take India, for example, with its untouchables. They've got a caste system in Japan. They've got caste systems in every country in that part of the world. What they are doing is sending the Negro after solutions of problems that almost 2,000 years of Christianity and the other religions have not solved. And when you begin to go after century-old problems and try to solve in ours, you're going to have friction. There are so many other things that energy should be used to advance the cause than going after that type of solution. The Supreme Court, in its decision, upset the question of separate but equal educational facilities. Let us examine that for a moment.
You want to respond to anything he said thus far before we get into the Supreme Court thing?
Yes. The Bible does have an answer. Christianity does have an answer. We're all part of the human race. And we live, there's sin and sinners. You know? So there was an answer in the Bible. Already, like you said, they haven't solved it in 2,000 years. Yes, sir, you know, yeah, it was. I mean, the answer's in the Bible. It's the way we view each other, and the way we view each other should be a part of the human race. Look, we've got a common enemy, and it's not each other. It's Satan. That's our enemy. And that's who's coming after all of us. So is there anything you want to say to that?
Yeah, I mean, I echo everything you just said. Yeah, Christ is the answer to all the human problems. The problem
that's
is
right.
that you have men with wicked hearts. And men with
yep.
wicked hearts enslave their own brethren.
That's
what
right.
they do. See, it's the
yep.
human condition. How is
mm-hmm.
it that he's talking about the black elites. The black elites, they set the tempo, and they keep the black, you know, the rest of the blacks in subjugation. Well, it's black on black crime.
Yes.
It's the black elites doing it to the rest of the black community. Well,
just
that
like
is
the bishops.
True. Listen, in Russia, who keeps the Russian people down? The Russian government.
Government, yeah.
In America, who keeps the people in check in America? The government. Cuomo kept
yep.
New Yorkers in check. Whitmer came, you know, Michiganians in check.
Whitmer.
Yeah, Gavin Newsom kept Californians in check. It's the elite keeping the masses in check. It gets played out again and again and again.
Yes. Yeah.
man
but this
on
is
man
all
violence.
Part of communism, what we're seeing right now, all this fighting, all everything, we see this for what it is now. It's communism. I mean,
well,
that should
cultural,
be it should be
cultural,
an eye-opener.
Yeah, the cultural Marxism.
Cultural
right?
Marxism,
it's,
yes.
That's what it is. The cultural Marxism
yep.
wants you to learn to blame somebody for your own
mm-hmm.
inadequacies or for your own non-achievements. Blame somebody else.
That's right.
When I
yeah.
used to get it,
well,
when
that,
I came home with a D, when I came home with a D on my report card, my mama didn't whip the other kids in the neighborhood. She whipped
yeah,
my fanny.
Exactly. You got a D? Oh my
yeah,
goodness!
Many times I got D's
when I was
in the fourth and fifth grade, because I was a class
yeah.
clown. So
yeah,
and see, and that's how she drove the clown out of me. Okay.
Yeah.
So
I had a couple of those.
She didn't go whipping the kids in the neighborhood. Brought this home? Whose name is on this report card? Okay, prepare yourself for a whoop.
Grip your ankles.
That's it. Get ready.
Yes.
Okay?
Pick your stick.
And don't call on Jesus, and don't try to speak in tongues, because it ain't going to
yes.
help.
Yes, exactly.
All right? So that's it.
Been
you
there.
See, yeah. Personal responsibility. You
mm-hmm.
are to blame. Nobody else. That's it. And even
right.
listen, even if somebody blocked me or said we're gonna prevent you from so you go to another place and you achieve.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
That's right.
That's it.
Yeah, there's nothing worse for me than before I was saved, there was nothing worse than someone talking about, you know, that he had, was a victim of everything, you know, just complete, always complaining about problems and all this kind of stuff. I mean, and then wanting to minister to you about Jesus. And I would always think, well, if you have all these problems, you know, and all these things are a problem for you and you have this hatred and anger and all these problems going on, and you want me to accept Jesus, you know, what kind of Jesus do you serve that can't, you know, work out these problems or change your heart, you know?
Right.
It was always a bad witness, you know, for people who had, you know, my life is terrible, I'm going through this and that. Oh, by the way, do you want to know Jesus? It's like, no, has he not sorted out your life first?
Mm-hmm.
So what they're
right.
doing now is creating victims, you know, in everything. And there's a lot of, you know, victim mentality going on out there. And by doing that, I mean, it gives you an excuse for being a sinner, you know, not to repent, for one thing, but it also keeps you down. If you're a constant victim, you don't ever see the light at the end of the tunnel here. You know,
right.
and it's just not a good witness. It's not a good witness for Christ. I can tell you that personally. It's like, well, no, not if I, you know, I don't think so. I mean, what has it done for you? What has Christianity done for you? Has the Lord changed your heart? How do you feel about this? Are you still a victim? You know, so I know there's things that are, it's hard to get over, but the Lord does work through most, you know.
Right, right.
Work through you. And he's able to help you get through those things. If he's not, well, then maybe you just want to be there. Maybe you choose to remain there. I don't know.
Yep.
I don't know. Am I?
I would. No, you make perfect sense.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Some people just choose to remain where they're at, you know, not looking at the long term of what you could accomplish if you, you know, have a changed heart if your heart has changed, you shouldn't be wanting, you shouldn't want to stay where you're at. You always want to, that little bit further. You want to move ahead, always. You should always be looking ahead and not behind. And this will not, communism, Marxism will not allow you to do that. You have to dwell on everything, you know, from the past. And that is right. It causes anger. There are people that I know that would never say a bad thing against anyone. And they're getting upset about being called things that they aren't over and over again. You know, there, and it does, you know, where make people angry. That's what he said.
Right.
He said, you know, if you start painting people with a certain brush over and over again, and this person knows inside themselves they're nothing like that. But if they can get a bunch of people against you and make them feel that way against you, you know, that causes a lot of anger. And anger is what is keeping people down, you know, this hostility and anger from moving forward. I don't know what else to say about it. I mean, I'm not an expert on that, but I can tell you that, you know, being doing this show, it was an eye-opener for me because I could actually say he's right on everything. Everything
right.
he's saying is right, and it makes sense. It just all makes sense out logically.
Right.
You know,
well,
of what he's
yeah,
saying.
Well, yeah.
And we're seeing
and again,
it.
And he's called this thing common sense.
Yeah.
Right? Common
yeah.
sense. That's it. That's
yeah.
all we need, a little bit of common sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right.
Under Separate But Equal, the southern states where we have a biracial society and have had, and much of it was by agreement with the Negro himself, because most of the Negro church organizations came about as a result of the desire of the Negroes themselves to separate. That's how your African Methodist church came into being. The Negroes used to worship with the white people in the South. They used to attend the same churches. The Negroes themselves decided that they would withdraw from the white churches, and they established their own church known as the African Methodist Church. Of course, there are a lot of agitators who tell you that just the opposite is true. In addition to that, it is also interesting to note that separate schools, many parts of the South, were voted for and approved by the Negro leaders themselves. Take in North Carolina, through there, the Negro Republicans, voted and decided that there should be a separation of the educational institutions. This biracial setup has gone on in the South for a number of years. There have been many problems growing out of it, racial friction and so forth and so on, many acts of violence, many inequities, many injustices. But interracial commissions were set up in the South, and these commissions were composed of responsible white and Negro leaders in the South. And they were doing a pretty good job. When there was friction between the two groups, they sought to find a solution. And as a result of it, much of the progress that has been made in establishing good relations in the South can be laid at the door of the interracial commission that functioned in the South and enjoyed considerable respect and prestige. The schools, many of them, were inferior to those that were provided for the white students in the South. The Supreme Court decision was a form of pressure on the South to equalize educational facilities. And as a result, the South built many new schools, many of them far superior to those that were attended by white children. The lion's share of the appropriation went for that purpose. What is the situation today? As a result of it, 131,000 Negro teachers man knows educational institutions. The Supreme Court, by its decision, has relieved the South of all responsibility to equalize educational facilities in the South. The Supreme Court doesn't make appropriations. It doesn't. And if the legislatures in the southern states don't make the appropriations to equalize schools, the Supreme Court's not going to do it, and they can't force them to do it. And the result is that they have relieved the South of any responsibility to equalize education for Negroes. Now, the NAACP has gotten a total number of Negroes integrated in schools. They consider that a great victory, but I say it's a Pyrrhic victory. In the first place, who said that Negroes can't get an education in the South? Any Negro in the South who wants an education can get one. And the facilities were gradually being equalized. Who said that 130,000 Negroes were so inferior that they are incapable of teaching their own children? Now, if a Negro thinks that his own people are so incapable of teaching his own children, how should he expect white people to send their children to that inferior Negro teacher? And what? And I wouldn't let the Supreme Court or anybody else put the stigma of inferiority on teachers of my own race. Sometimes I think that they're only concerned because a socialist radical came over here and wrote a book on the American Dilemma, that John Merrill, that the only way you're going to get equal education is for a Negro to sit beside a white child. Negro child to sit beside a white child. Now let's look at the logic of that, if there is any logic in it. Do you know that the only way that a child is going to get ahead, not by who you sit beside, but by the amount of attention that you pay to what the teacher teaches you and what you get at home and what you're willing to do in extra study. Those are the things that enable you to get ahead, not who you sit beside. So that equalizing of education doesn't mean that it's equalized by sitting beside somebody, but it's equalized on the basis of having the same educational facilities. Now, if they were reasonable and logical, they know it's a biracial society there, that if they didn't like to go to school there, they want to send their kids, they'll send them north or in the east or the west to schools where they're integrated. But don't spread the rumor throughout the world that Negroes are kept in ignorance because of prejudiced white people and all of that propaganda, because that type of propaganda is the brainchild of the communists. They want to use it, and they want to use the Negro to gain foothold in those parts of the world where the darker races exist. I don't give a tinker's damn about a Negro. You know what a tinker's dam is, don't you? I saw some of you look and frown. Well, a guy that tinkers uses a soldering iron. He uses a soldering iron. So he builds a little dam. He builds a little dam in order to hold that solder. And that's what's meant by it. So I don't want you to get the wrong impression here. But what the Supreme Court did was open the Pandora box. They have created the fertile soil for the operation of the worst type of elements on both sides. And as a result of this, race relations have been set back 50 years in this country. Americans who were previously gradually working out their problems, and when there were solutions of these problems, they came from the heart, and there wouldn't be any going back on them. It's different now. White Americans are taking sides. Negro Americans are taking sides. That friendliness that existed at the workbench and over the backyard fence beginning to vanish in the thin air. There are tensions, bitterness, frustration, and hate. And America, as a result of all of this, faces a long period of tension, bitterness, and distrust. All of the goodwill and brotherhood that has been built up over the years has gone practically by the board. And heaven knows where it will end.
Any comments to that point?
Well, yeah, I would like to say something about the school system. In our area, the black schools got more funding. So they provided better programs, broader programs, better sports. And I actually sent my kids to a black school, and they excelled there because of the because of the program. They did, and the teaching. The teachers were excellent. And they excelled, both of them, in that school. So I can say that there was no, them saying, well, the white school's a better school. Actually, the black school was a better school. The teachers were more than qualified, if not better qualified, I hate to say, than the teachers, in the white school. The principal was excellent. She was like a church mother. And I'll tell you, my kids just excelled in everything in that school. So as far as the educational system, you have to apply yourself. But, yeah, it's there. The teachers are fantastic.
Right.
And we have, they were fantastic. We have to ask, then, who actually initiated the segregation process, Who are the people who wanted segregation? Was it these groups? Is it the communists? Yeah, that's what he's saying. This is all a part of a plan. Anything you have to say according
to what you heard? You're proof positive, right? That sending your kids to a quote-unquote African-American predominant school, children did not get a lesser of an inferior quality of education. They got a superb education.
Yes.
And so that destroys the myth, right?
Yes.
That
exactly.
The schools are underfunded or what. Now, for example, take in New York City. New York City has the worst schools, but that's because of the teachers' unions and the communist agenda from the teachers' unions.
Yes.
With Mayor de Blasio and Governor Cuomo and all, those people running.
Mm-hmm.
It's the largest school system in the nation, and it's the worst. The worst.
Yeah.
So,
and
all kids
go
there.
Think the
white,
teachers,
Jewish, blacks.
Yeah.
Latino kids
and
go there.
The teachers appreciated kids who wanted, they had some brilliant teachers at that school, and they appreciated the fact that the kids wanted to excel in the school, and they were willing, to excel. And boy, they really, I'm telling you, my daughter, she's really, really smart. And a lot of that came out of, going to that school, sending her to that school. And she's forever grateful that we did that. They both are. They're so grateful that I did that for them.
Yeah.
And who also started the Republican Party? good point,
Mr. Lincoln. Mr. Lincoln, right?
Exactly. But who supported the Republicans first?
The blacks.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. So, yep.
Yeah, which again, look, you know, back in the 50s, it was the Democratic governors who did not want the advancement of black people. Democratic, that's a historical fact.
Exactly.
You know, you can't,
yes,
you just can't say that wasn't true. It was very true. Very true.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
And you're living proof. I just want to say, you're
back
living
back there in this resolution, all of this that's transpiring today, the communists talked about in 1928. In section number 7, for example, it says the Negro question in the United States must be treated in its relation to the Negro questions and struggles in other parts of the world. The Negro race everywhere in the press race, whether it is a minority in the USA, majority South Africa, or inhabits a so-called independent state, Liberia. The Negroes are oppressed by imperialism. A strong Negro revolutionary movement in the USA will be able to influence and direct the revolutionary movements in all those parts of the world where the Negroes are oppressed by imperialism. Now, this was in 1928. So, it is clear that the communists are deliberately developing issues and campaigns and actions that could be used for propaganda among the Negroes and among their blood brothers in Africa. The Reds want to take over Africa. They want to drive out the British, the French, the Belgian, and the Portuguese. And they want to replace their rule with Soviet rule. In spite of all of the objections that I have against any other ruling in Africa, I say Africa should be for the Africans. But I would prefer seeing them there than to see Red Russia go in. Because under them you have hope. But under the communists you have none. Of course, the Reds seek to exploit the national ambitions of the Africans. They took some of the young Africans to Moscow. They sent them to school. They gave them training. And then they sent them back to Africa to take part in and lead the African nationalist movement. They promised them arms and money and everything else, much of which they gave them. Moscow isn't interested in African freedom. They're interested in using the Africans for their purpose. And when they get through with him, they'll make him work for them. And when he tries to rebel, they'll bring the Red Armies from China and Russia to crush him with superior arms.
Well, again, that's just human nature. Every group is exploiting people under them. It's,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yep.
You know, it is what it is. I mean, you talked about going
yep.
to vacation in Mexico. You stayed at a beautiful, luxurious hotel, and the people who invested in building those hotels exploit the people by paying them $20 a month. Those are
yeah.
Mexican. Those are Mexican nationals with money
mm-hmm.
Investing in business and then exploiting their own people for $20 a month.
That's right. That's right.
So whether you're a political party, whether you're a religious group, or whether you are, you know, an investor or whatever, people are looking to exploit other people for the almighty dollar.
Yep. That's right.
You know, it's been going on since forever.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, I started to say in the last segment we talked about, you know, although the school experience, I could talk on that, you know, and say that, you know, what they're saying is not true, because I've experienced that with the schools. They're better schools. The black schools are better schools.
Right.
But you are a testimony. You're proof. Growing up in the quote-unquote hood, you're living proof that you came out okay. You know what I mean? You're living proof of what the Lord can do. You're not a victim. You're not, you're not, I mean, when I think about the education you have and what you've been through, you're actually living proof and what the Lord has brought you through. Not only for the Lord, you're a testimony for the Lord, but you're also proof that you could grow up in a hood or in an environment, you know, in New York of all places, and turn out all right, you know? So
yeah, I mean,
you're a walking testimony. I said, I don't know how you got out of there without being either a pimp, a drug addict, you know. And I gave the list. I don't know how, when I watch movies of that period of New York, in the time you grew up there, and how bad it was, a mobster, you know, I just don't know how you came out the way you did. Only by the power of God can I see that you came out of that, you know, unscathed with the power of God.
Again,
so you're a testimony.
It's a miracle. But again, you know, not only was it God, but then I had the people in my family who applied the discipline, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you got it when you brought home D's. You got it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And so there were people there, and you know, God, of course, guiding my steps. But there, you know, people lived in the projects, but the projects were not filled with all bad people. There was just a lot of good people. A lot of, but there were some selling drugs. There were others, you know, in gangs. And look, if you're in an Italian neighborhood, you got Italian people selling drugs. You got Italian gangs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Italian gangs, they're called families, mafia, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. It's a gang.
Yeah.
So every neighborhood has its bullies, has its, you know, entrepreneurs, but you know, you have to you know, just go above everything and try to make something of yourself in this great land of opportunity.
Yeah, while you can before they completely take over.
Right.
Honestly.
Why you can.
I'm gonna tell you, there was no I think growing up, we grew up in the same era, and there was no victimhood in the household. We weren't allowed.
No. That word did not exist. Nobody used the word victim or victimhood my generation. Nobody used
that word. No.
Nobody used it.
No. There was no excuse for whatever you did. You just, you know, you knew you had a punishment going when you did wrong, and you just had to take the punishment. That's, you know, so that part of it, I get that totally.
Sure.
I got spanked all the time because I was lippy. I mean, I would say things that I didn't realize they interpreted as talking back.
Right.
Looking back, it probably was, you know, but I got it all the time for that. So,
it makes you who you are today, because you're into apologetics, you're into defending the faith, you're into opening your mouth and sparing not. So something good came out of, you know, something good came out of all that.
Well, I questioned everything, and they didn't like that, but I questioned everything. I would say, well, why is that? You know, and they thought that was being smart, you know,
right.
A smart mouth. But it was actually, I was curious why they felt that way or why they thought that way or, you know, how they interpreted certain things. They would just say, well, you be quiet or you're going to get it. Just shut up. Go to your room. But to me, I really wanted to know why they felt a certain way, and why was that? You know, they would tell you a story and you'd question it. And they didn't like that, but it works all good now because I question everything now.
And that's who I was. And that's a good trait. That's a good trait.
Yeah. So.
Okay, here's Mr. Johnson.
You can't play with those devils without getting burned. And I hope and pray Almighty God that in the struggles and the aspirations of the African people for freedom, that they will shun the reds as a righteous man shuns sin and the devil. The communists, in order to impress the Africans and the Asians, brought before the United Nations a charge that the United States was resorting to genocide, insofar as the Negroes were concerned, that they were trying to murder all the Negroes in America. Now, everybody knows that that isn't so. But they brought that charge as a propaganda measure against the country. What is significant that this whole integration campaign coincided with Russia's stepped-up campaign in Africa and Asia. I wonder sometimes if this was just a mere coincidence or whether this whole thing wasn't planned. I think the races were getting along too well and beginning to solve their problems. Negroes were getting jobs they never held before. Things were getting along pretty smoothly. Now everything is just topsy-turvy now. And I wonder if this whole thing was just a mere coincidence, or was it a part of a planned scheme? Of course, the northern politicians, they try to convince the Negro that they're in his corner. They're a bunch of hypocrites. They only flatter the Negro. They flatter him because they want to use his vote. That's all. Negro will have to learn to think and plan for himself and do the things which he thinks is best for himself. This integration stuff has gone to all sorts of extremes. So much so that Negro intellectuals are opposing housing developments in Negro neighborhoods. Now, housing developments are for the purpose of eliminating slums. Now, whereas slum conditions in Negro communities, these Negro intellectuals would rather have the slums than have a housing development because they say it'll mean segregation of the Negro. We want integration. They don't want any more Negro business, and that Negro business which exists, they say that should be integrated. Well, if it's integrated, what has he got? He wants to lose everything. Even want to close down the Negro churches. They don't want them anymore. Want everything integrated. Everybody else wants to keep their church. But he wants to close his down, integrate it. It's all right if those people want to integrate and they want to join. That's perfectly all right. But why all of a sudden you got to just break up everything? I don't know what kind of spirit that is. Well, you just break up everything, helter-skelter, headlong, like a bunch of cattle in the situation. It just doesn't make sense. I don't know how these people think. One writer in a newspaper said they ought to close down all Negro colleges. They don't want Negro colleges anymore. They do not want to build anything, most of them, who talk for this. And they have nothing to offer to any other group. But they want to force themselves everywhere, and as a result, they create friction. The Reds started all of this integration stuff, and they have been using the Negro in this because they wanted the Negro to unite with the white communists. That was their objective, not with the other white people, but with the white communists. And as a result, they have destroyed all pride amongst them, Race pride has been destroyed. Solidarity and concerted effort on the part of the race has disappeared. The Negro intellectual is so sold on integration that he doesn't see the necessity of doing anything for his race, by his race, and with his race. He has naturally an inferiority complex himself, and he wants to get lost and swallowed up in the white group.
That's my whole point with the black bishops going to Rome. Why are you identifying with Rome? Why are you going to the white man to get validation? You get your validation from God.
That's right.
You see? But they're going to Rome because they feel that unless they go to Rome and get the official, you know, send-off by the Pope, they're nobody.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
An inferiority complex is what they have.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, think about how they're flocking to Rome.
Yeah.
They're flocking there.
See, you nailed this a while back. This is the thing. You nailed this. You saw this a while back. And I think that just realizing now that this is all communism, you know, it's not the real issue. The real issue with this whole thing is communism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
right.
The realization of that is incredible.
Yep.
I mean, it struck me, wait a minute, this, we are labeling it this, and we can label it that, you know, but behind it all, when you pull the curtain, all these problems, you know, I found it odd. Things were going well in America, then chaos. So
right.
Who brought the chaos to the shores? Communists.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Who brought chaos
right.
to the church? Communism. You know, you see
mm-hmm.
they infiltrate everywhere. So, yeah, you were ahead of it on that. You spotted that with the problem with the bishops. I wonder if they realize that they're just catering to communism. I don't know.
Yeah. And you know, communism is a form of enslavement.
That's
because
right.
these people, you know, you go to African American church. If you're under one of those bishops, you are in bondage. You're in slavery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they take full control of your mind, your will, your money. You know, your life, your destiny. They dictate to you.
Yep.
And that's not the way it's supposed to be.
No, you've lost
not
your freedom.
You lost.
So you're actually under communism.
Right,
I mean,
sure.
You know, you've been enslaved
Absolutely.
By communism. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Not
Absolutely.
By any one person. It's by a group, a bunch
right.
of communists. That's the point, that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they're being used. They're being used. People are being used to bring this in unknowingly. A lot of people unknowingly are being
right.
used in the world to bring this agenda or to bring communism to the United States. When they do that, we're done.
We're done.
We're done.
We're done.
Yep.
That's it. And we're almost there.
Yep.
We're almost there.
Almost.
Yep.
Almost.
All right. We have a few more minutes with Mr. Johnson.
Okay. Okay.
Unfortunately, it's only a Negro minority of intellectuals and leftist Negro preachers who presume to speak for all of the Negro people. They try to silence all opposition by calling anybody who disagrees with them as Uncle Tom. The Reds are getting full support to the NAACP in this whole program because the program creates friction and tension, bitterness and hate, and provokes violence. And the communists thrive on that. Some of the liberals and the communists and all of that ilk, along with NAACP leaders, have been demanding more and more federal power. They want laws to turn the FBI into a Gestapo to hunt down everybody who disagrees with integration. They even propose laws to give the federal government the right to step into states and arrest governors. They want to take away all power from the states. And when this sort of thing happens, then we're on the road to dictatorship. And once you have given the federal government that power, it can be used against you. Depends upon who seizes control of the federal government. Today you may have men of goodwill wielding that power. Tomorrow you might have men of ill will and ill repute. So you have to be careful. And there are certain people who are using the Negro in order to establish that power in Washington. And the Negro is just merely a pawn in a game that's bigger than he is. It is our duty to arrest this development towards the concentration and centralization of power in Washington. If we do not arrest this development, then we're on the road to dictatorship. Beneath all of the racial unrest, at the root of all racial unrest in the country, is the clammy, cold, bloody hand of communism. We must arrest it, and we must try to bring America back to sanity. And let us pray and work that the misunderstanding, the bitterness, the hate, and the frustration, and the tension that exists may disappear, and that the Spirit of God, the Spirit of truth, the Spirit of charity may prevail again amongst our people.
All right, that was an outstanding teaching there by Mr. Manning Johnson, who passed away shortly after, according to Sister Marie's research.
Yes. I found him fascinating. I found him so honest and straightforward and brave. It was incredible. Now, this was in the 50s. Think about it.
Right.
Think about it. What a brave man to stand up.
Sure.
And don't you wish that his warning had been heeded right now? Think about it.
Yeah.
Think about it. What we're seeing is how prophetic what we're seeing is exactly what he warned against. So we know when we see all this division and we see all these problems and the uprising, we know that the communists are behind it. That's what it is. That's what we need to call it.
Cultural Marxism.
You know?
The fruits of
yep.
cultural Marxism.
That's it.
The tree
That's
is starting
it.
To bear fruit.
Yep. And I'm so thankful for him that he came out. And, I mean, the comments on that audio were, I wish he was here today. Oh, I need to send this out. Everyone
mm-hmm,
needs
mm-hmm.
to hear this, you know.
Right.
It's all
right.
positive. And how prophetic, you know, we're living in these times. So he is admired by people now who, you know, are just watching this play out before our own eyes. But, you know, we have to say these organizations help bring this in.
Right.
Certain organizations.
Right.
And that's not the only ones. That's just a few. So sometimes what looks good on the outside, you know, is not, you know. And it's money that drives. It's just
Look,
the love of money that drives these people.
It's like it's like the Black Lives Matter people. They just got more money, right? They
mm-hmm.
just got money, and then now they're starting to buy real estate with that money. Wait a minute.
Yes, exactly.
What are you doing buying real estate? I mean, I thought you were for the people. Who,
mm-hmm.
What are you buying this real estate for? Who's getting this real
yeah.
estate? Who gets to live on this real estate? You see, they're getting
yeah.
all this money based on a cause that we want to help victimize people. Well,
mm-hmm.
it seems like, again, like so many, they use a crisis to enrich themselves rather than meeting
yeah.
the needs of the people who are undergoing the crisis. And we just see this
That's
being
it.
Played out over and over. Look, hurricane season's coming now, right? You know, June, July, August, September, up to the end of October. It's going to be hurricane season. Let's see how many hurricanes hit the United States, and let's see how many preachers start begging for money.
Well, I think Paula was doing something recently about, I don't know what came up, feeding the poor, talking about how much she feeds the poor. You know, right.
Sure.
So they're starting already. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's
it's
you know.
A con game. It's a con
right.
game, and it's all about money at the end of the day, and people's lives and their livelihood, everything, that does not matter. It's to put you into bondage, you know. I mean,
mm-hmm.
and we're there. I mean, we should be able to just look out around us and see what's going on and identify this, you know. For what
right,
it is.
Right
now.
Right. And all people
Wake
need
up.
To do is listen to your previous shows where you talked about cultural Marxism and
mm-hmm.
and that's it. And it's easy peasy. You'll understand it and you'll see it happening
yep.
all around you and you'll say,
yep.
wow, this movement is progressing in America.
That's right.
Right before your eyes.
Yep.
Right before your eyes. And the woke church, who is still asleep spiritually, but woke politically,
mm-hmm.
Is part of this. They're
yes.
pushing this agenda.
That's
so
that right.
That should tell you everything. That should tell you everything.
Yep.
Well, great show, as always.
Thank you.
Mr. Johnson said that lecture, spoke that lecture in 1958, and 63 years later, it still rings true.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Boy, what a lecture that man delivered. What a lecture.
Yeah.
So you, my dear sister, have the last word, and thank you for digging up that audio and in the archives, you know, the dusty archives of America. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I think the Lord dug that up for me, so I'm going to give him credit because we needed to hear that. Thank you for listening. Have a great week. Hopefully, you know, this opens your eyes to what's going on. And, you know, be safe. We'll see you next week. Have a great day. God bless.
Yeah.